Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Do it a little faster.
You still got it.
It's your girl, Shanti.
And it's Antoinette.
And we are
Around the Way Curls.
Join us as we share our unique life experiences,
aka tell all our business,
and explore both the profound and the profane.
Because duality is a thing.
Yes,
hey, girl. Hey.
Hi. I feel like I was higher and louder than normal.
It sounded good.
Okay.
Was that called vibrato?
Ah. Yeah.
That's the thing that goes. Ing.
Yep. Do it again. Yes, that's exactly it. Nope. Those are runs.
Runs. Oh.
You're doing runs. Or
is
attempting.
Run really a musical technical term? I thought that was just like a colloquialism for.
I don't think anybody in the music world like will use the word run. What do they call that? A riff. They say they're riffing.
Yeah.
What are you? Okay. And there
That's
you go.
That's the white version of a riff. No, niggas, a run.
Riffing and running. Sometimes them runs run away from you, child. Tricky. I don't have any updates.
Oh, nor do I.
Well, there you have it,
well,
kids.
Look at that.
An updateless, screw the pleasantries. And let's get right into it. We are here. It is Thursday. It's May when this is coming out. Happy May. Hopefully spring is fighting back because April was quite cold. And yeah, we do have some voicemails. Do you want me to play some listener voicemails?
Sure.
All right. First up, let us begin.
Hi, ladies. My name is Jazz from Jersey. I love you guys. Wanted to start with that. I just finished listening and weeping from episode 345 with Jade and Crystal. I'm so appreciative of this episode. I'm so appreciative of the time that you girls, that you ladies took during the playoffs to record. Minute mark, 1 hour, 5 minutes in, made me stop and just lay on the floor. It's where Crystal mentioned to you, Antoinette, about the need to be scolded and punished. And that resonated with me heavily. And I'm trying not to cry. But I'm in my mid-30s, and I come from the background, a religious background, of a high-control group where punishment and discipline was common if you made a mistake. And it was almost interpreted as a mistake meant you were a bad person, or that your character was to be questioned. And it wasn't until my late 20s of being in a situation like that where I sought help, and I was disciplined, and I was deemed unworthy to be a part of that religious organization. And then I carried that into my 30s of feeling like a bad person. And it wasn't until recently, I now have a great partner in my life who is not attached to that organization, and I'm not a part of it still. And I'm now receiving love and support and affection, and it feels foreign because I'm accustomed to feeling scolded or feeling like I needed a punishment or homework in order to correct myself. And because it feels foreign, I'm working hard to not shy away from it and not dismiss it, but at the same time, learning that we sometimes do need constructive criticism in our life, and that when we receive it, that doesn't mean we're a bad person. It's complicated. It's tricky. Life is tricky. But I say all this to say thank you for the episode. Thank you for taking time again to record it. For those of us who are in therapy or looking for a therapist, your work is invaluable. This platform is invaluable. And I am sure I speak for many listeners that this episode kind of shook us up to not be afraid of the shadows in our life that we might need to address so that the trajectory of the rest of our life is more peaceful. So thank you again, ladies. Love everything that you do. Be well.
I gotta listen to that episode real bad.
Yeah, she's talking about episode 345, Therapy 101.
Yeah, I saw the
with
clip.
Crystal Jean and Jade of All Jades. Yeah, what a gift it is to have Crystal in your life, or excuse me, Crystal, as she goes by in the podcast space, Crystal in your life, to hold up that mirror. You and I have talked about it on here, about me not having an older Black woman in my life, me looking at Toni Morrison clips and wanting a no-nonsense older Black woman to tell me what it is and what it isn't, and, you know, give me that tough love. And Crystal was just like, let me invite you to consider the fact that you sound like you want to be scolded and reprimanded and punished, and maybe you need to be held. And I was like, what, for me? And I sat with that for quite some time, and I sat with it with how I just operate, how, you know, from a childhood, how my parents kept me out of trouble. And she even went on to say, like, yeah, a lot of what was amazing to me was when she said, you know, yes, those things kept you safe. They were effective. They were effective for you as a kid. You know, like, I was the kid, I always say I was the kid that needed to get in trouble in order to know not to touch the stove. Telling me was not going to be enough. Explaining the consequences was not going to be enough. I was such a rambunctious, just always in something, hurting myself, about to drown, sticks in my knees, falling off the bike into gravel kid that was just always doing something. I can't believe I never broke a bone. And now, that's the way I expect to learn as an adult. And that's the way I expect to be treated in relationship when I do something wrong, or when I make a mistake even, and that's something that's not even intentional. I actually had therapy today. I had my little intake with my new joint.
So you found one.
I found one. I tried one, didn't love her. And now I'm on to the next. And she sounds like she's understanding. She broke it down for me today, where I brought up what Crystal said to me. And she said, that makes sense. And she said, so really what I'm hearing is maybe you don't need punishment, but maybe you're looking for the why and not the what. And I was like, that's it. Hmm. And I said, I would love for someone to help me identify the what. But more importantly, I need to understand the why, so that when the what comes, I can navigate it. You know, mm-hmm. I can pivot. I have new tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she seems to have really understood that. So I'm excited to meet with her. Shout out to Shorty. I'm not going to say her name. Make a name up for her.
Does she fit the Toni Morrison?
Not at all. Mm-hmm. She's young. She's very young. I don't know how old she is, but she definitely young. I got But let's see. She's young and she looks like some kind of habsy like us. So let's see what happens. Oh boy. It's probably best. Anyway, and I say habsy as a joke, guys. Relax. But yeah. I think that you can also, that voicemail probably resonates. I mean, I know you don't talk about it on here, but she talked about being a part of a religious group that has made, because you, anyway.
I think it's not, it's, that was not huge in my upbringing. Like okay. I wasn't raised in it as much as it is very much my father's way okay. of seeing the world and operating. So definitely, yeah, I think as much as I like to talk about, we like to talk about duality, I really do not have the, I really love polars. I love to be like, no, this is all the way bad. This, I'm terrible. And I got to be all the way over there to the good, excellent, versus being able to hold multiple things at once and be okay with it in my own way of being. So yeah, that rung bells. I think a lot of us out here struggling in that way, or unraveling in that way, I would say.
All right. I have somebody just called, so I'm going to play that. Mm-mm. We had a bunch of calls on the duty versus passion mm-hmm. episode, but I feel like we covered that on Crystal and Jade's episode too, so we don't have to do it again.
Hello, friends. This is Arjena. I've called once again to talk about boy drama when I was very overly caffeinated. But now I've come to just ask for some general advice. So to provide some context, I'm a senior currently in college, so I'm about to graduate. And I just kind of have like a general question for you guys. So like, how do you guys in your personal lives embrace the idea of change, or how do you navigate change? Just because when I graduate, obviously a lot of things are going to be changing, and I would just love to know what you guys do and like what your thought process is around that. And yeah, and then also if you guys have just like general pieces of advice when it comes to just like life after college. Or just like, yeah, just things that you would find helpful for me to be aware of. Thank you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful day. Bye.
Bye. Oh, we got the babies.
No.
We got the babies listening to the podcast.
I think when she said that she called overly caffeinated, I want to address that first. I'm about a boy. I think there were a lot of calls, but I think there was someone who was saying that they were newly dating a gentleman who treated them very well, but they found out that, I could be wrong, but they found out that their political points of views are completely separate, completely opposite rather, and that he sounded like he was a little bit of a Black Republican. He was just like, I mean, wasn't very progressive. And it's so interesting. I'm bringing this up because the next conversation that we have with our guest kind of ties into that. And she was saying, could you date someone who was opposite on the political spectrum from you? And I feel like we've answered that, but I'm happy to answer it again. For me, it's a no. And it should be very clear as to why. I'm very activated with politics. Politics get me going. And my life just would not gel with someone who didn't see things at least 90% of the things the same as me, or was at least progressive. I have like hard lines on certain things, like, you know, a woman's right to her own autonomy when it comes to her body. I hit the mic, apologies. Voting rights. And things of that nature. So, but to talk about this, and Shanti, did you? I think you answered no as well. You said mm-hmm. no, you wouldn't either. Okay, yeah. So that's that answer. To talk about this, when you, first of all, congratulations. And depending on what school you're at, I hope that y'all are giving them hell if y'all are out there protesting on behalf of ceasefire in Gaza. If not, okay, that's fine too. But the biggest thing for me that I had learned the hard way after school and kind of fell into a bit of depression was that my entire life, from the time I can remember to college, someone was telling me what to do. I had a schedule. I knew what was going on. I knew where I was supposed to be. I knew what the expectation of me was. And someone else was setting the rules. I was following them and I was excelling. And then when I graduated, it hit me like a ton of bricks of like, oh, wait a minute. I don't have anything to do. I have to make a life for myself. Nobody's going to tell me to work out. Nobody's going to tell me to go find a job. Nobody's going to tell me the next steps. Like, there's no roadmap. It felt like, it just felt like, okay, you're done. Good luck. And I really struggled with that. Especially since the field that I was going into then was one that you had to be very self-motivated of like, you had to look up auditions, you had to go, you had to, it was all on your terms, you know, unless you got an agent who was sending you out, which, you know, I didn't get an agent until at least, I want to say 7-8 months down the line of auditioning. So it was very tricky to navigate. And I felt out of control and I felt lost. I felt really lost. And I did not feel safe enough to express that to my parents or even to the people around me, really, because I had always been so high performing. And I had a lot of shame around that of like, well, did you drink the Kool-Aid? Because you did everything right. You got all the awards. And now you're out here confused and sad and lonely and broke. So I would say have a plan. If you know someone that you trust, that you look up to, have a mentor, and stay close to both of those things, you know, and don't hide. If you have questions, ask. You talked about embracing change. You don't have to figure change out by yourself. I think that's the biggest thing that I learned after school. And I'm still trying to learn today.
I didn't go to college, so I didn't have that, or I didn't graduate from college, rather, nor did I go away to school. I went to, sorry, my daughter is making brownies for her bake sale, and she is, sounds like a Sesame Street character, like in a kitchen or something. It sounds like a parody of...
I think it's picking it up a lot less with these new mics than what you think.
So I feel like I was always out here figuring it out by myself from a very young age. I think that I definitely had to manage change because I was going to school for nursing and I worked really hard and did really well and then decided that wasn't for me. And I did that. I think a lot of it has to do with your nature and relationship with change now. I don't know that it's going to change once you graduate. So how do you manage change now? Are you somebody that is impulsive? Are you a planner like Antoinette? Do you take it with stride? Does it excite you, change? So I think you should really just kind of have language and name how you manage change now. And if you don't like it or you want it to be differently, then move from that knowledge. But change is inevitable. You're going through an extremely... lots of changes are happening to you in this time, whether you want to or not, whether you think you're going to have a rain on it or not, you are in a very new place in your life, in a very exciting place in your life. And I hope that you're meeting it with excitement and you're meeting it with curiosity and you're meeting it with a lot of compassion for yourself because you ain't done none of this shit before and probably doing a lot of shit alone for the first time. So that would be my word of advice for you. And to Antoinette's point, finding folks that you can talk to while you're experiencing it and that can help you navigate and manage it. But yeah, you got nothing but change ahead of you in a lot of ways now.
Flow, girl. Flow. Flow or get knocked the hell over. That's the only
drag.
That's it.
Let go or be dragged.
All right. We have an incredible guest. Tanti, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah. So after this break, I'll tell you all about it. It's exciting. You guys asked for it.
After the break or before the break?
After, because I explain who it is after the break. When they come on, I tell them exactly who it is.
Okay. Want to sing?
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Boop. As someone that has textured and curly hair, I am so excited to share Clairol Textures and Tones came out with a permanent color range specifically for us, the curly, coily girls. Say hello to the improved formula and new look while preserving your curls and your shine. Do y'all know about Clairol Textures and Tones? Because guess what? You finna learn something today. They give you brilliant color and moisture with zero ammonia. Okay? That is almost unheard of. It's quick. It's easy to use. There are 12, count that, 12 new upgraded texture-loving shades just for us. We can feel proud to be able to transform our hair and ourselves right at home. Girls, this is going to save us a lot of time and money. So remember, it's not the hair color you were born with, but the hair color you were meant to be. Clairol, it's so me.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we are back, and we have a very special guest, a much-requested guest, I will say, as well. Inspired by a past episode that we had about the biology of falling in love, we have dating coach Anwar White with us. A little bit about Anwar before we go into this. Anwar is a certified dating and relationship coach that has 13 years of experience helping Black and Brown women date with strategy, meet relationship-ready men, and get into the best relationships of their lives. And we are very happy to have you on our podcast. I found you on TikTok, and I was both intrigued and a lot of my dreams were crushed as well. It was kind of like,
oh no,
like, come on, girl, get it together. It was kind of like a shock as well of some of your theories and some of your ideas. So I can't wait to get into it. Welcome. How are you? Welcome to Roundaway Curls.
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. I was just telling you all that I should have curled up my hair before I came up, girl. It's straightening out a little bit, but I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
How did you get started in this? Okay. Like, what made you decide that this is the work that you wanted to do and show up in the world providing for women?
Yeah. I mean, I have always, ever since like elementary school, have helped boys talk to girls and girls talk to boys, right? So I would be double dutching with the girls and then playing basketball with the boys. So I've always been able to navigate a variety of different groups and really be a conduit of sorts. You know, it wasn't until I had gotten my MBA from an Ivy League institution, and I would reach out to all of my girlfriends and I would be like, hey girl, what's going on? And they had the great careers, the great jobs, the great cars, the great homes. They traveled a lot, but the love life was not where it needed to be. And so me being a type A person that I am, I'd just be like, girl, I'll just take this over for you. This is ridiculous. You're amazing. Like, let's get this done. Let's get this checked off and let's keep it moving. So that's exactly what I did. And, you know, within a couple of months, my girls were in relationships. Within a couple of years, they were, you know, engaged and married. And at that time, I was, you know, managing billion-dollar budgets for fashion companies. And so I was like, I'm going to do this because I actually really enjoy this. And, you know, I'm a product of women from my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my mother, and each one of them were married at least 3 times. Mm. Right. And so for me, this is a purpose, a mission to really help the women that have given so much to me.
Amazing.
Are you married?
I'm married with 3 children. I'm a suburban mother of 3, honey.
I know that.
Okay.
That's right.
Yes. So the proof is in the pudding.
And by the way, if you want a dating coach, please get one that is married, that has seen some go from A to Z, because that will help you. A dating coach who has that experience will be able to not just help you in dating, but also help you get relationship ready. And those are 2 very different things.
Mm. Mm. Where have you been? Where have you been? Anwar, I have to say something to you. We should let you know our status. Mm-hmm. Not that we trying to give free advice or nothing.
Oh, you can have it, girl. You can have it. I'm very, I offer as much as I can.
Very generous. A giver. You really are. I must say, the content is in-depth, rich, and very generous. So
I try to make sure that my free stuff is better than anybody's paid stuff. So that's my mission. So please, whatever questions you have, I'm here for them.
I know, that's right. Well, first off, I was single for 8 years. Single, kind of dating, kind of not. My dating story, Shanti can tell you, are horrific. Like, horrific. And I recently started dating someone who is very relationship ready. Mm-hmm. Pisces man, very like been in therapy for like 7 years, talks about his wife, talks about the plans he's made in like just creating the life that he wants for himself and inviting someone into that to plan with him and to move, like he's with the shits all the way. Got it. Shanti is the person, I'll let you see for yourself, but from my point of view, as her friend, she's always been in a relationship since I've known her.
Serial monogamous.
Serial monogamous. But has found herself newly single.
Yeah, I've been single for a little over a year now. A year and a month now, not counting. I have a daughter. I have a 13-year-old. Her father and I separated when she was 2, so we have not had a long time together. And every relationship that I found myself in prior to our separation, her father's and my separation, I never lived with anybody, never was engaged with anyone. It was always kind of compartmentalized where like I would have the relationship with this man and then I would be a mom, and I never really brought those two together. So there was never real potential in a lot of ways in my eyes for us to like, you know, become a family, which for a very long time was my goal until my last relationship. And I don't know if it's because of, I'm in a weird place right now. I don't know if it's because of the heartache or the disappointment. Maybe it is of like being able to, you know, have a partner that wants to like be a father as well and join, and me not knowing how to do that and maybe not offering the most conducive, most clear expectations of a man as well. So he comes in kind of like, what do you want me to do? Anyway, this is not therapy. That's where I'm at right now. And I am not, I haven't really been dating. I'm not very excited about dating either. I feel like there's a lot internally that I need to deal with before I go out there and try to couple up with anybody. So that's my status. Look at him reading me.
I'm listening.
So that, yes, that's where I'm at. With that being said, how do you know when you're ready to date?
Good question. Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. I think for many of us, especially people of color, many of us will feel like we need to get our shit together, right? That we have to be perfect. And what I want to offer to you and your listeners is that I kind of think of it as you've got to be 50% there, right? Mm-hmm. Roughly. Like, because here's the thing, in dating, which is different than outside of dating, like, you will have things that will come up for you. Dating is very much like parenting. It'll bring up all your ish. And so there's an opportunity to actually heal while you're dating, which is very important. And then there's another opportunity to heal while you're in relationship. And, mm-hmm. and I want to offer for those ladies that are sitting on the bench and that are waiting to get their shit together and to be, you know, Miss Perfect girl, don't do that. Don't wait for that, because you'll never get there. Number one, so you'll always be on the bench. And number two, even if you try to become the most perfect version of yourself, dating will still bring the triggers, the traumas, and everything else up. And your job, right, is to be able to manage those, right? And to be able to be open enough to actually address them. That's how you, like, to be prepared to date is to be open to the fact that that is going to happen and be ready to actually address them. And if you don't want to do that, you probably are not ready to date. The other thing, putting that aside for a second, you should be thinking about this as fun, right? Mm-hmm. And like, if you're not happy with your life, you're not going to be happy dating. Mm-hmm. A lot of women, and I'm not coming for anybody, they are dating because they want to be saved. Mm-hmm. And the gag is you have to save yourself. And once you save yourself, you're going to feel more whole and actually bring a different level of energy to the dating process that will attract even greater guys. So if you don't feel like you're dating, please understand, like, from me, you will never hear me say, girl, get in there. No, because you're not going to get any results, right? Your energy has to be one that is light, fun, free-flowing. And sometimes that takes a little bit of work outside of the dating sphere to be able to get to that point to actually get great success. Hmm.
And who's your coaching for specifically? Who is your customer? Who is your demographic?
I work with Black and Brown women. So women of colors, mostly Black women, between the ages of 30 and 50, but I go as low as 26 and as high as 65. And I think that Black and Brown women have specific challenges, specifically Black women in dating. I think it's much harder for them. Mm-hmm. And so we try to address that in my programs.
Why do you think it's much harder for them?
Well, one, I don't think I know. Two, a variety of different subjects, right? One, there's dating racism out there, right? And, you know, if you look at some of the statistics, I was a statistics undergrad major. The response rate for non-Black women is closer to 43% online. The response rate for a Black woman is closer to 32%, mm-hmm. right? That's number one. Number two, we don't really grow up with a lot of boundaries in our household. Mm-hmm. We can't say no to our parents, right? Mm-hmm. And, or many of us. Right. And so it makes it hard to date well and get into relationships well, because you have to boundary well. Even when you're done dating and you're in a relationship, you have to set boundaries every step of the way. right? Mm-hmm. That's your power in a relationship. Mm. And so if you don't know how to do that, and a lot of women of color don't, Black women specifically, it's going to be really hard. It's going to be really hard. So that's another reason. Another reason is vulnerability. Like I said before, when we're raised, oftentimes our feelings aren't necessarily celebrated or welcomed. And that really trains us to not want to express them, right? And if you can't express how you're feeling, it's going to be hard to deeply connect with a guy, because he is going to use your vulnerability to know that it's emotionally safe for him to be vulnerable. And that's where the deep connection actually happens. So part of my work is helping my clients learn how to have the emotional confidence to be vulnerable from a feeling perspective. Okay. There are a lot of other reasons as well, but those are like some of the major ones that I see. Uh-huh. Another one, masculine energy, right? Mm. There is a lot of masculine energy that a lot of, and you said you're a single mother, right? As a single mother, you have to have your masculine energy because you have to take care of everything. And what I know for sure is that if you have masculine energy, right? If you're thinking before you're feeling, if you're doing before you're being, you're going to attract a certain kind of guy. Two kinds of guys, actually, because relationships are about compliments. One, you're going to attract a guy that's in his dominant feminine energy, which is basically a guy that has regressed into a teenage boy and who is looking for a mother. Or two, you're going to attract a guy that is in his hyper toxic masculine energetic state and will try to force you and to submit into your feminine energy. Both kinds of guys are very dangerous. Both kinds of guys is not what you want. So part of my work is helping my clients really tap into their feminine energy. And I'm not saying that you need to be a fembot. What I am saying is that there has to be a really good balance there so that you can also meet a guy that is balanced. You talked earlier about the guy that has been to therapy. He's probably much more balanced, but you have to be able to match that balance. Mm-hmm. That's really important. The masculine energy for many Black women comes from the fact that they are programmed and conditioned not to trust men, right? And they are told that they have to rely on themselves because no one is going to be there for them. And so that is something that is kind of ingrained. And then society validates that just based on the micro and macro aggressions that happen on a daily basis for many of you. So it's hard to be able to ask for help, right? And be able to rely and lean on people. But that is very important in a relationship. That is how a guy falls in love with you. He has to do things for you. That's part of how his testosterone grows, increases, and your testosterone needs to increase to fall in love as a man.
Oh, go ahead, Antoinette. Go.
I'm sorry. I have some follow-up questions to that, if that's okay. Is that okay? Yeah.
Always.
All right. So one, it's really, I just want to point out, because a lot of our listeners are probably like, wait, what about me? And we are being very like heteronormative right now, right? With like men-women relationships, mm-hmm. women-men relationships. Okay, fine. So let's just establish that off bat. I think it's interesting, the vulnerability aspect. I have two questions. So I'm someone that like is very vulnerable in relationships, but there's an aspect to that that I've learned that it's been taken advantage of because I am so vulnerable. I feel that I attracted men who saw that vulnerability and exploited it and kind of used it, didn't use their powers for good, I always say. Like they saw it, they could have been a loving mirror or a good partner to me, but instead they took advantage of me, right? But I still lead with vulnerability, so fuck it. But the other thing, so I guess my question to you with that is like, what would you say to someone? Because I hear that from a lot of women, like, you're so vulnerable, you're so this, that's not me, because look at what happened to you. That's one. And then also the masculine energy. When you talk about masculine energy in women, are you in agreement that there's masculine and obviously you are because you talked about a man's toxic masculinity, but can you get more give more detail into like the masculine energy. Like, should women also, like, should women have masculine energy, or should there be a balance of both masculine and feminine energy? And what is that? What are those energies? How are we defining them? Because it's a touchy subject right now for folks. Very long-winded questions, but curious to know if you can give us more insight into that.
Yeah, I'm speaking more heteronormatively, number one, because most of my clients are that. Mm-hmm. But I do work with same gender loving individuals. And so that's why a lot of the language that I use will be based in energies, as someone who is also in an LGBT relationship. Don't be surprised, but I'm actually someone that's in my masculine energy in my relationship. Forget the mannerisms, forget the boys, honey. So I just wanted to clarify that, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I guess my question for you is, what do you define as vulnerable? Because I think a lot of people think that they're being vulnerable and they're just being open. So Ooh. When you share a lot of facts and you share a lot of thoughts and opinions, that's not necessarily being vulnerable. I define vulnerability as being able to express your feelings, being able to, and I have a feeling wheel that a lot of therapists use, being able mm-hmm. to identify how you're feeling and be able to express that. There's a difference between being vulnerable and being emotional, right? There's a difference between saying, what you said really hurt my feelings, and now I'm feeling sad, versus crying and yelling. Right. So I think it's important to make that distinction, because a lot of people are very emotional, but might not be very vulnerable. Yeah.
Such a great point.
So that's your second question. Your third question is around defining masculine and feminine energy. And the way that I describe it and the way that I think about it, like I was saying before, is, you know, the feminine energy is about being, it's about having a feelings based. It's about acceptance. The masculine energy is about thinking. It's about doing. It's about judgment, mm-hmm. right? And so one of the questions that I ask many people is, would you rather be respected or would you rather be cherished? Now, if your answer is respected, then you're probably in the masculine, right? Or dominant masculine, let me say. If you want to be cherished, then you're probably in your dominant feminine energy. Yeah. And I just want to reiterate, every person has both energies. Mm-hmm. It's really about understanding what sort of energy you give off while you are dating and in your everyday life. And the disconnect that happens, and what I've learned, because we do this all in my program, most Black women are actually very feminine in relationships. Mm-hmm. They're very feminine in relationships. But their everyday lives, and even while they are being courted, they're giving off masculine energy. So there's a huge, there's a bit of a disconnect that happens between courtship and relationship. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is when you switch it up, right, you lose credibility. Now he doesn't know who you are. Hmm. Now he doesn't understand, like, the person that I was working with, that maybe, you know, I was hearing from you more often, or you were doing more things, and in the relationship, you're becoming more feminine, more kind of, you're sitting back more, we're changing the game up. So part of the work is just making sure that there is a level of consistency from courtship into the relationship.
Hmm. I experienced that in my courtship, and I feel like a lot of that has to do with my level of safety. Can you talk about, should women be navigating relationships around safety? Is it safe enough for me to reveal myself? Is it safe enough for me to be generous in a particular way with someone that I'm just learning? What is that dance of like being on guard? Or do you not be on guard? You just jump into this in the courtship, like, this is who I am. I'm open. I'm ready. I'm also have a lot of discernment to tell if you can manage, if you're qualified to be with me.
So here's how I think about it. And here's the interesting thing that I think a lot of people don't think about. I think a lot of people think that if I'm vulnerable, then it can be very dangerous. Hmm. And what I want to offer everyone is that you not being vulnerable is actually very dangerous because, and especially nowadays, when you are not vulnerable, you will not be able to evaluate his emotional capacity and sensitivity. Mm. You will have to be able to see how he responds to your vulnerability and to your boundaries. The reason why maybe you all did not feel safe while being vulnerable, it had nothing to do with your vulnerability. Vulnerability is a superpower here. It has everything to do with your boundaries. And being able to know when something doesn't feel good, to set the boundary and to observe how that boundary is responded to and respected or not. And if it's not respected, you have to go.
That's the clip. Go ahead. That's the clip. That's what's going to be on social media. I'm taking my notes. Thank you.
You talk a lot about self-sabotage. And please forgive me if I'm not connecting this, but you connected self-sabotage with the hierarchy of needs for women as well. Maybe I have that misconstrued, but can you talk about self-sabotage in dating a little bit and the patterns that you see happening over and over?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has their own inner child wounds, right? Whether it is neglect or abandonment. And it's a very sensitive subject because this is why dating is so intense and so, like, just crazy. Like, it will change your chemical makeup, right? Like, the feelings that you have during dating and love and relationship really can take over. In terms of self-sabotage, it's interesting. Like, I call it self-sabotage, but this is really about honing in on your inner child wounds, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone has a different level of them. So for example, my father abandoned me when I was in fourth grade. And so anytime I felt someone stepping away a little bit, I would do one of two things. When I was younger, I would chase, right? As I got older, I'd be like, well, F you. And my boundaries would be very rigid and I would cut off people like that. And I would have my walls up so high that no one got a chance to actually get a chance to get to know me. This is really important because people think that their walls are protecting them, but it's part of the self-sabotage, right? No one can see your mansion if your walls are so high. Yeah. So we do a lot of things in the name of safety, but also can be self-sabotaging because we might not feel deeply ready to be in a relationship, to be seen, to be loved. And we often might not feel like we are worthy of those things.
What's the difference between walls and boundaries? Because this is something that is super important that I think that a lot of us are misinterpreting.
Yeah. I think walls are, I'm not going to tell you anything about myself. And you're going to have to do hoops. You're going to have to prove yourself to actually get to see me. And in my experience, the only people that will climb your walls are thieves.
Whoa.
And burglars. Regular guys are not going to do that. They're not going to do it. They're just going to walk along because they live their life in integrity all day, every day. And so they don't have to do extra stuff. They just are. This is why walls attract narcissists, toxic individuals. The difference between having a high wall in front of your mansion and boundaries is I don't have a wall. I have a very open space. And if you come onto my property without my permission, I'm calling the popo. Your boundaries is you calling the popo. Yeah.
Not black people calling the police now. I'm playing. Makes sense. Okay.
Do you feel like as a collective, especially with all these gender wars, that men, the collective of men are given a bad name, that there are more good, ready, willing, and able men than we are perceiving there to be and open to seeing and engaging with? Or is it really raggedy out here?
Is it limited to men?
I think raggedy? That there's a lot of work for everyone to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that for men specifically, they're not doing as much work as women are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that a lot of the rhetoric about men is true. I always tell my clients, like, 80% of the guys out there are not even relationship ready. So like, you shouldn't even be tripping on them. Part of my work is to give them strategy to weed out that 80% so that they are just focused on the 20% and figuring out if there's a match between them and the 20% that they're getting to know. Based on everything that's happening now, and I just did kind of like a video about this, about what I'm calling the love civil war, the dating civil war, that 80% is starting to creep up to closer to 85-90%, which doesn't seem like a huge shift. But if you had 20% and now you have 10%, it means that the availability of eligible relationship ready men has been cut in half. And that's, we've really seen that from the pandemic until now.
Talk about that. Where were you getting those numbers from? How are you?
Oh, this is based on my own numbers working with thousands of women, right? One of the things, like I said before, I'm a statistics major, so we quantify everything in my program. So what I'm seeing is major differences between how things are broken off and the number of dates that are happening. You got a lot going on right now. Mm-hmm. You have a recession. You have a lot of layoffs. We're in a political year. Research says that men are becoming more conservative and women are becoming more liberal. So there is a disconnect in terms of foundational values that are happening here. Mm-hmm. You have a space where we are post-pandemic and post-Me Too environment. So men are not approaching women as much. There's major disconnects that are happening in the culture of dating, love, and relationships that is making it harder to find individuals that you are aligned with.
What is a relationship-ready man?
Good question. I think a relationship-ready man is someone who is stable within themselves and their career. The man does not feel good about his career, he will not feel self-actualized. And he has to be self-actualized to be able to provide for a family. So that's really important. And there's a lot of instability with men, and I will say specifically Black men, which I think is important to state. I think someone who is emotionally available, someone who is able to express his feelings in a calm manner, not just with anger, someone who is able to set boundaries with you, right? Because there are a lot of guys that you can push over and do whatever you want with, but that actually is not going to make a great relationship-ready man. I think a man who is full of solutions. I talked about that recently. A lot of people are focused on a provider and they think about this in a financial sense, but I think about providing in terms of providing solutions. If you say, hey, I don't know what to do at work, you want him to be able to give you solutions at work, with your home, with how to navigate the dates, the planning, the logistics, and all of that. He has to be able to provide solutions. And if you have men that might not be as educated or don't have the experience to do that, they're probably not relationship ready.
Yeah. So I want to clarify. So you're not saying, because this is something that we talk about a lot on here about men finding their value oftentimes and society reiterating this, their value in what they can produce, in their work, in their status. You're saying much deeper than the ready man is self-actualized in the way that he understands how to navigate the world and is solution-oriented, not necessarily the status, the job.
You know, those things I'm saying are for men that are actually ready for a relationship. But the core is about being self-actualized, and that has to do with work, and that has to do with money.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So that...
that's like, I'll be honest, I argue against that completely, and I could be wrong, because I'm always this person that's like, we can't find our work or our value in our work. We can't only focus on that.
Women don't.
Well, I'm arguing that for men, I find that it's unfair for me not to find my value in that, but to look at a man and say, you can't date if you don't, or you can't be in a relationship if you don't have your shit together at work, or you're not self-actualized in this way. Because in my mind, earlier we talked about how, like, you don't have to have it all together. You don't have to come perfect. So does that not apply to a man, or is it really like society's demands of men create this for them, that like they have to show up in a certain way at work, or they can't show up in the relationship?
Men and women are different. When I say you don't have to be perfect, I'm talking about people feel like they have to have all of their emotions and their triggers and their trauma put together, right? So when I was saying that earlier, that's what I meant.
Okay.
When it comes to men, the way that they feel good is through their career. It is through the money that they make, right? And men and women are very different. That's how men self-actualize. Women self-actualize often through relationships, through connection, right? And so that's why a lot of men can take or leave marriage and commitment. Women, it's a stronger hold because it actually makes them feel at home and safer. Yeah.
You don't think
what's going on? Your energy has shifted now, honey.
I'm sitting with it. I'm sitting with it. I there's a part of me that's rejecting it, but I'm sitting with it because I'm not a man. I've been in conversation with men who are like, absolutely not. It's unfair. That thinking is actually what is preventing me from wanting to be in a relationship, not the fact that I don't have X, Y, and Z.
That's not true.
Okay.
That's not true. If a man is doing what he needs to do in his life, a lot of them will be ready for a relationship. Whether they choose to engage in one is different, right? What I think you're hearing is from a lot of men that haven't self-actualized yet, and they're not feeling good about themselves enough to get the women that they actually want.
No, these are the men that I'm thinking about are actually men who are really successful, and they're looking back and saying, I felt like I was dating. When I was dating, I was running off my resume and folks weren't necessarily interested in me. It was like, oh, I've made it here. So now I'm able and valuable in this dating pool. When before, I was still just as good of a man, still just as ready and open to be loved and to love, but nobody was checking for me. So I feel crazy out here right now. Yeah, I'm a little bit.
How can I trust, or how can I open up in that way?
Like, they, somebody's got way better off than me now. they doing their thing.
No. I totally get that, right? Earlier in this conversation, we talked about how everyone has work to do, right? And what happens, especially for good guys, is the experience that you just mentioned, that there are a lot of women that will go through your resume like an interview. But I think it's a defense mechanism. And I think it is because, and it's, I want to be specifically clear about for women of color and Black women specifically, because many Black men have not been financially stable, that they feel like they have to do that to even feel like these men can be in a consideration set, mm-hmm. right? So I understand his perspective in terms and his lived experience here, but I also can understand why a lot of women will do that. I feel like there is a subsection of women that are very extreme in that matter, mm-hmm. like being yeah. like interviewing and being like, you've got to make 100, 250K before I even talk to you. Right. So I get that. But I also know where it's coming from. And before she got to that point, she had to deal with 8 to 10 guys that weren't ready because of that. And here's the important part. When a man is not making as much as you, he's going to feel emasculated and he will try to humble you. And he will probably cheat on you.
Right? You're breaking our heart. No, no, I don't want you to stop. I'm just responding like, this sucks.
But I want to give the reason.
No, you why. Have to. Yeah. Go ahead. No, I'm not telling you to
if
stop.
If I'm making 150K and this guy that I'm talking to is making 50K, he's never going to feel powerful in the relationship, and he's going to try to find that power somewhere else. This is why a lot of women are trying to figure out, well, how much do you make? And if we're talking about Black women specifically, single Black women are making more than single Black men. The rates, the higher education rates are like 2 to 1 and 3 to 1 for graduate degrees. Mm. So I understand why a lot of women would go by the resume. That's not something that I necessarily encourage in my programs, but I can understand why.
Hmm. So because of this economic difference and reality and how disproportionate it is, where it's from what you're saying, I don't know the statistics, but Black single women are making more money than Black single men. And if you couple those, the woman ends up getting the shitty end of the deal and being cheated on or being with somebody that's not actually going to show up fully in the relationship. That sounds hopeless to me. Like what, or is this, the fact that it's this conversation now has moved on, or what it feels like to me around value and identity in money for both men, especially for men, and women having to like deal with the wounds of that or deal with them trying to reconcile with that if they don't make a lot of money, is disheartening. And it feels like there has to be a other way. Like, this can't be right. This can't be real. This is symptomatic of a bigger problem versus just like, oh, this is the nature of things, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you're hyper-focused on just dating Black men, then yeah, I can understand that.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Oh my gosh. I love you. I love you. I love how honest you are. You just staring at us like you either want this information or not. Wow. That is sad.
It's one of the reasons why Black women have a marriage rate of 27%. Because 90% of Black women are marrying Black men, and it's almost close to half the marriage rate of other racial groups. That's why I'm one of the few dating coaches that are telling Black women to date everybody and see who wins. You will 7x your chances if you do that. Now, if you, and I ran through the statistics, if you're looking for a Black man, 6 figures, graduate degree, over 6 feet tall, that's like 1 out of 250 guys. And that's not even to take into consideration if that guy likes you or not, and if you like that guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to depress or to burst bubbles. I'm here to give, like, you get to navigate your dating life however you want to. If you want love and if you want a relationship, to have that and to have the highest possibility and probability of that, I would say date everyone. Even the guys that are shorter than 6 feet tall or whatever it may be, right? So it's up to you.
What is your notion of like toxic masculinity and feminism and these, the social constructs that keep men and women black and white against each other or super defensive or, again, you know, having to identify with these ideals that don't really represent the heart of somebody and the real nature of somebody. To me, how I'm interpreting what you're saying is that, child, we're in a capitalist space. We're in a capitalist country, right? Men find their identity through their work and how much they make and how much they can provide. Women find their identity and their space in the ways that they can be taken care of, the ways that they can surrender. It ignites their feminine nature, their nurturing. You put those together, boom, White House, picket fence, kids. Y'all probably got some wounds, but you're going to work it out together. Like that is what I'd perceived, right? Is that what you're saying? Or is there, feels like there's far more nuance.
I don't necessarily know if I described women in that way. What I did say is that they really do identify with connection and relationships. Mm. And that's how they self-actualize. And it doesn't have to be with a man. You get to find that fullness with your friendships, with your family ships, and in a lot of different other ways, right? So, you know, I tell women all the time, your soulmate might not be a man, and that's okay.
Girl, we've been saying it, Nasty Death.
And that's okay.
Yeah, it's
okay. Right? Wow. I mean, I talk to women all the time. I talk to my girlfriends before we were married, and it was like, girl, we just gonna have a compound and we're gonna live together.
And we, right? Like the and golden we say girls. It.
That's our plan.
Because the connection and the relationship feels good. Mm. Yeah. I think times are changing where women are feeling like they need a man. And I'm here to tell you, you don't need one, but if you want one, that's fine too. Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear about your strategy. I know that we're getting close on time, but because we have Chanti talked about a little bit about the strategy, but I want to get it from you because we don't always interpret things correctly. Like, what is the strategy?
I can't tell you that information because that's proprietary information.
I know.
From the program.
Oh, God.
Nice try, though.
I tried, y'all.
You really tried it, girl.
We'll end with this, okay? I have a 13-year-old daughter. Mm. All right. She's watching me. I'm doing the best that I can. But what should I begin talking to her about? How do I start engaging her in her strategy for courtship and for what she should be preparing herself for internally as well as in her exchanges with?
Yeah, a couple of things. Yeah. Let her date. One of the hardest things that Black women have to face is the fact that they get a later start. Hmm. The white counterparts are starting to date at 5th and 6th grade, girl, and many Black women don't start dating until they get to college. And I always say the Black 30s are like white 20s because you don't get that much experience. Huh. If you're open about this, instead of how we grew up and we had to hide this part of ourselves from our parents, then you actually get to have more influence in how she navigates this journey than maybe you would have before. And she won't have to feel like she has to hide or lie behind your back and be isolated by herself in her love life. Yeah.
That's such great advice.
Actually, I have one more question that we didn't touch on. One more question and I'll be done.
But that's on her side. I want to finish my answer because this is really important. On your side, right? She's seeing everything that you're doing. So it sounds very weird, but I want you to be self-centered. And I want you to be selfish. Because most women of color, Black women specifically, are taught to do everything for everyone. And that is how they are to express love and to be loved. And I want her to be able to see that mom gets to have what she wants to have, and that's okay. And that ultimately, if she can do it, I can do it too. Because guess what? The best relationship of your life is going to be with a man who just wants to give to you. And you have to be self-centered and selfish enough to receive and allow all of it and be okay with it.
You talking to me right now? Shanti looked at me because, child, listen, I ain't gonna say nothing. The way that I am struggling with accepting all of this love and help and support coming my way, the way I am pushing back, like, I got it. I can do it.
Don't say that. You have no arms, no legs. Act as such.
Oh my gosh. I've never in my life. And he's patient. I tell him I'm unlearning so much. I've been single for 8 years. And even when I wasn't, I still had to do. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll have you on again because I would love to talk about sex, because sex then brings in this biological attachment and bonding, and that's where we really get fucked up in the head. So I would love to bring you on. Please tell everyone where they can find you. Again, you have Anwar has wonderful, wonderful social media presence and content, like shit that I'm just spending a very long time on your page looking at all of your reels that you share. I did figure shit out. No, it's really generous. But like you said, if that's generous, your program must be like, it sounds like therapy in a lot of ways and really healing. Yeah. So please tell everybody how they could connect.
So on all the socials, at Dating Coach Anwar, A-N-W-A-R. I also have a podcast called the Get Your Guy Coaching Podcast, where we talk about these sort of topics and more. And if you're like, you want to work with me, you can definitely go to my website and book a call with me and we can see if it's a good fit or not.
Oh, that's right. And we'll make sure all the things are in the episode description so you can just click the link and head on over and find the love of your life.
Till next time. Thank you so very, very much. So grateful for all the tidbits.
Thank you. You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right.
You have just heard an Around the Way Curls John. Follow them on Twitter at ATWCurls and Instagram at Around the Way Curls. We out early.
Very good.